Miami-Dade and Broward schools move up their return dates under state pressure. Phase 3 in South Florida starts with a lot of confusion and lessons learned from the election 2 years ago. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Some public school students and most teachers in Miami-Dade and Broward counties will head back into their classrooms beginning next week, a week earlier than the school boards planned just a week ago.
This is not a no-risk situation. Every time we go back out there, we're increasing our chances of being exposed to coronavirus, getting infected, and bringing it home.
Also, what Florida can learn from the 2018 election and the recount just 2 years ago. It's all coming up on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN, made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.
My name is Arturo Valenzuela from Weston, Florida, and you're listening to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Now, here's Tom Hudson.
Arturo, thanks so much for your help during this special pledge edition of the South Florida Roundup on this Friday. Great to have you aboard. Thanks for listening, everybody, and for supporting public radio. Public school students in two of the state's largest school districts are returning to classrooms next week. Some of those students are, and the teachers will be, in-person learning resuming in Miami-Dade County starting on Monday. The Broward County Public School Board approved for a reopening start date of October 9th. That's days later than the state's request for a Monday reopening in Broward County. Here's the school superintendent in Broward, Robert Runcie, speaking during a school board meeting on Thursday.
Those additional days make a big difference and gives us a lot more comfort being able to execute our reopening plan. As you know, we've been planning since the summer.
Schools are reopening as the state reopens under phase three. We'll talk more about the public health concerns and consequences later on in this program. Parents, teachers, students, what are you thinking about as school buildings get ready to reopen? Lots of questions, I know, amongst families and teachers. If you've been back to school in person already in Palm Beach or Monroe counties, what was that experience like? Share it with us on social media this Friday afternoon on Twitter at WLRN. WLRN's education reporter Jessica Bakeman is with us here. Welcome back to the Roundup, Jess. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us. Tell us about this board meeting in Broward County that happened on Thursday that changed the date of the reopening. What reasons did they give for moving that reopening in Broward to an earlier date of October 9th?
Right. Well, the school board had been planning since the summer to transition to in-person or a combination of in-person and remote learning, depending on the choice of the family, on October 16th, which is the start of the second marking period. And then as it got closer and as some of the conditions regarding COVID-19 in the region have been improving in the late summer and early fall, they started to make plans to make that happen. So they were looking at a transition that was going to start on October 14th. And that was also the day that Miami-Dade School Board had decided they were going to reopen schools. And then enter Richard Corcoran, the state education commissioner. He sent letters last Friday, a week ago, to both school districts saying, basically, you got to open October 5th.
Yeah.
And there were some threats associated with that. The bottom line is both of the districts were looking at anywhere from 60 or 70 to $300 million of money getting taken away that they were expecting to have if they didn't comply. And then yesterday during that meeting in Broward, as the school board members were very unhappily debating their limited choices, they heard that the commissioner said he would accept a plan that gave them a few more days to prepare. So instead of opening on the 5th, they're opening on the 9th, and it is a staggered reopening. So actually, teachers are back on the 8th for a planning day, and then students will come back in waves from the 9th through the 15th.
Yeah, I believe the statement that you received from the Department of Education was that the commissioner is approving it, but doesn't agree with it. Is that doesn't support it was the characterization. Yeah. So
yeah.
Talk to us about the dollars. Why is this money at stake depending upon when a public school classroom reopens?
Sure. So it's a little complicated, but I think I can break it down for you. Basically, there's two aspects to this that are important to understand. The first one has to do with enrollment. So school districts throughout the state, throughout the country, have lost a lot of students going into this school year. And that's partly because parents and families are dealing, obviously, with really difficult situations, and a lot of them have chosen, you know what, I think I'm going to send my kid to a private school instead. Maybe they decided to open in person sooner. Maybe it's a smaller class size. Maybe they decided to go with a charter school, or they decided to do homeschooling. Mm-hmm. So because of that, we've seen this big drop in enrollment. Miami-Dade and Broward have both lost between 8,000 and 9,000 students each. And so with that enrollment typically comes money, right? Like the money that the state gives to school districts is based on how many students you have. And so the state, Commissioner Corcoran and Governor DeSantis, they want schools to open. And so back over the summer, they said, if you start opening schools 5 days a week to any students who want to be there in August, we're going to do all these things for you to make it easier. And one of those things is we're going to fund you based on the enrollment that you had before COVID-19, before you lost all of those students, instead of your actual enrollment now. So it's a lot more money that you'll get if you open schools like we want you to. Now, of course, South Florida school districts didn't open in August, right, but they were given some leeway to open later because obviously we had a surge of COVID cases over the summer. But now that things have improved, basically the Department of Education is like, our patience is up. It's time for you to do your side of this deal, which is open the schools in person. And if not, we're going to fund you based on the actual number of students you have, not the higher number that we were funding you based on how many students you had before all of this happened.
But with these changes,
so that's
this
basically
week,
the first part.
Yeah, go ahead and hit the second part, Jess. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. So then the second part of it is that there is generally a difference between how much the state gives school districts for students who are in classes versus students who are only online, which obviously that existed before the pandemic. There's Florida Virtual School, and school districts have their own virtual school programs. And so basically the second part of this is they're saying they were going to give you the full amount of money for every student, regardless of whether they were in class or at home, which is especially important because a lot of students are probably going to be shifting back and forth between the two modalities. Right. But if you don't open schools when we say, we're actually only going to give you a lower amount of money for the students who are working online. So the point is, at the end of the day, this adds up to $300 million for each school district. And the boards were just like, we can't live with ourselves if we make a decision that leads to losing that much money.
Yeah, in fact, the Broward County Public School Board worried about several hundred layoffs if in fact that money wasn't to come through. Jess, hold on. We're going to take
4,300.
Several thousand layoffs then, yeah. Jess, hold on with us. Jessica Bakeman is the education reporter. We need to talk about the experience in the classroom. Are schools ready? We're going to talk about that next as we continue our conversation about schools reopening next week in Broward and Miami-Dade counties. You're listening to this special pledge edition of the South Florida Roundup on WLRN.
This is Sandy Bari from the still hot and sunny in October, Miami, and you're listening to the South Florida Roundup with Tom Hudson.
Sandeep, you're absolutely right. The hot and humid October. Wonderful to have you along, Sandeep. Thanks for your help in making this pledge edition extra special here on the South Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening and for your support. Don't forget to continue donating during our program. Many South Florida students are returning to classrooms soon. The Broward County Public School Board approved a staggered reopening schedule beginning October 9th. The Miami-Dade Public School Board is resuming in-person learning beginning on Monday, October 5th. WLRN's education reporter Jessica Bakeman is back with us. Jessica, what's the state of school readiness? How are parents and teachers supposed to gauge whether or not the physical spaces are ready to welcome back students and teachers?
That is a really good question, Tom. And I wouldn't want to downplay or discount how much the school districts have been doing to prepare for this. It also is a Herculean logistical feat that they are trying to make happen now on a shorter timeline than they had planned. And the explicit stated reason why both of the school districts wanted to open October 14th was because they felt they needed extra time to make sure that school buildings were ready. The administrations say they will be, the teachers unions say they won't be. So obviously for the safety of the children and the employees, I really hope that, you know, the districts are right and they get it all done. But, you know, some of the big concerns they have are around air ventilation. A lot of the schools are old and don't have air ventilation systems that are, you know, to the standard that would help with mitigating the spread of COVID-19. And so they've been ordering these air filters, but some of them are not even really compatible with the high level air filters. So they're trying to work through those issues.
Jess, we have just about a minute left with you, but we can look north into Palm Beach County, where students have been back in the classroom for a couple of weeks. What are the early results in terms of the virus?
Well, we have seen some positive test results in Palm Beach County, you know, as we have seen throughout the state. Every other district in the state besides Miami-Dade and Broward are already open. And there was a recent report from USA Today that did a comprehensive look and did not see big spikes coming from school reopenings. So hopefully that will be the case in Miami-Dade and Broward as well. But, you know, the situation is very fluid and it can change at any time.
Yeah. Jessica Bakeman, covering education for us here at WLRN. As always, a pleasure to have you on, Jess. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Are you ready for in-person learning? Parents and teachers, students, what are you thinking about? Let us know your concerns. Conversation on social media, at WLRN is our handle on Twitter. I'm Tom Hudson, and you are listening to a special pledge edition of the South Florida Roundup. The pledge line remains open during our program. South Florida typically reopened later than the rest of the state during this pandemic. That changed with phase three a week ago. Restaurants can now fill up tables. Bars can reopen with social distancing. Masks, though, must stay on. I spoke about reopening with Dr. Cheryl Holder. She's president of the Florida State Medical Association and professor at Florida International University's Medical School.
Dr. Holder, welcome back to the South Florida Roundup. We've seen infection rates in Broward, Miami-Dade, Palm Beach counties trend lower for some time now. That two-week moving average is around or below 5%. Do these metrics signal to you that South Florida was ready for the Phase 3 reopening a week ago?
The declining numbers for the South Florida infection rate is promising. Our concerns with the sudden reopening didn't leave our communities enough time to really prepare for having such freedom to go in without mask, to have so many people be able to congregate indoor dining at high capacity. So it is very concerning that the decline led to the sudden reopening.
What kind of preparations do you think were missed in the reopening announcement on Friday?
Looking at the health impact of what happens with coronavirus, especially on the most vulnerable, it's best that we have a clear, consistent message on mask wearing and social distancing and risk. So to reopen the phase three, we would encourage that this message becomes very clear that despite reopening, these are the measures that are absolutely necessary to prevent us from infecting ourselves and infecting others.
There certainly was a lot of confusion in the hours and day or day and a half or so after the governor's announcement a week ago, Friday at noon, that phase three was the new phase statewide. Local governments were scrambling to kind of figure out what it meant for their mask rules and other kinds of restrictions. Are you satisfied that today, a week later, that communication has been cleared up, that confusion has been cleared up?
I think some of the confusion has improved. However, when you still look at the school systems having to rush to reopen a week before they planned on opening, do they really have the supplies in place, the all the things that you would need to feel safe? Is it really good to expect that you're going to have 10 or 12 people congregate in one area and feel that it's safe at this time, especially that we're only down to 5%. in cities that went down to 1% and even lower than where we have, they're seeing an increase as they reopened, and they didn't fully reopen without the mask rules. So I think we should be a little bit more cautious if we're going to save lives.
How does that caution, in your opinion, manifest itself with the school openings in Miami-Dade County, which begin next week, and late in the week in Broward County?
What we look at in medicine is that increased chances of exposing yourself to anyone, the more people you do, the more likelihood you'll get exposed to the virus. So the parents should fully understand this. When there's a rapid opening and a relaxation of rules that seem to protect, it gives the false impression that it's okay. It's not as bad. The infection is under control and we will be okay. Because you could see already they had pictures all over Florida of folks in bars congregating and socializing without masks. So that tells you that the community definitely got a message that it wasn't as bad as it is and we're under control. And I think that's the underlying message that many in the community have.
Halsey Bashirs, who's the secretary of the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, which regulates restaurants and bars, sent out a tweet on Wednesday that read, "There are bars that have been closed for months in multiple counties across the state that have been scolded recently. We're in phase three and they're allowed to go back to business. They have a right to work and open back up. If uncomfortable with them, please stay out of them." That's the message from the top regulator of taverns and bars in Florida.
The underlying assumption that some people would make that, yes, we're open, things are under control, and I can go back out to my bar. If that message of reopening had been accompanied by, we're reopening, but these are the risks, you should understand the risk, balance the risk and the benefits, and make a real informed decision on what I'm going to do. So that's what we do in medicine. We give you the risk and the benefits to help you make an informed decision.
I'm going to ask a doctor's advice question here, Dr. Holder. Your advice to parents of school-aged children in Dade and Broward counties as they're looking at the reopening of their public schools, how should they approach it?
This is not a no-risk situation. If you have risky situations in your home, you have folks who are elderly, you have folks who have illnesses, if you are overweight, if you're diabetic, high blood pressure, many risk factors, you really should think, is it worth the risk of my child bringing this back to me? The children mostly do well, but also we don't know what happens to this infection 10, 20 years down the line. So if you cannot handle all of that risk, you might be best to wait until we have effective treatment and an effective vaccine, which is probably about 6 months away. If I had the situation in my family, no, my child would not go back because my mother is 91 and it's just not worth the risk. We are going to wait it out.
Speaking with Dr. Cheryl Holder, she's president of the Florida State Medical Association, professor at Florida International University's Medical School. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Testing and tracing, Dr. Holder, has been a key component of the reopening calculus. In your capacity as a medical doctor, how should these metrics about testing and tracing factor into reopening decisions?
Testing and tracing and containing is one of the key ways that we can control this infection. Reopening should have been partnered closely that your testing, tracing, containing system is in place. So you should have all your contact tracers in place. The community should have all the apps in place. The community should understand how to use this situation. They should be comfortable with tracers calling them. They should be comfortable with using the app. Then when you reopen everything, you'll be able to know immediately when somebody's been infected, and you can trace not just forward, but you can also trace back. I don't see that in place at the level that it should be to be comfortable that we're just able to go everywhere.
Dr. Holder, you have a very calm bedside manner as a veteran medical professional. You're kindly critical, if I may craft that phrase to how you are describing some of the decisions and some of the protocols that are in place here in South Florida.
Yeah, I do believe, but that to me is the way that folks see the positives and negatives in their decisions and realize that we're all trying to do what's best for our communities. So I understand their motivations in trying to keep the economy and trying to have people go back out and figure out how to live. But with that, understanding should be clear guidelines, clear understanding of risk. To have a wish and push it on everyone doesn't really benefit us in the community, especially those that don't have all the resources. President Trump and his wife just came up coronavirus positive. But for them, it's very different than many of the patients I care for. They're going to have round-the-clock care. They're going to be able to shelter in place. They're going to have somebody bring their food to them. They're not going to have to worry about cleaning their own bathrooms. They're not going to have to worry about infecting their grandmother. So very different. And I wish that they heal and they don't get as sick as many of my patients and they don't die like some of my patients. But for the rest of us out here, we need the best systems in place to protect us. And that's what we're asking for, and to protect the most vulnerable.
Dr. Cheryl Holder, president of the Florida State Medical Association and professor at FIU's medical school. Dr. Holder, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Stay safe.
Still to come on the South Florida Roundup, this special pledge edition, millions of vote-by-mail ballots have been requested. Is Florida ready to count them all and on time? The special edition, special pledge edition of the Roundup will continue in a moment.
I'm Diana Hernandez-Allende in Miami, and you're listening to the South Florida Roundup with Tom Hudson.
Diana, thanks for your help. We couldn't do the South Florida Roundup and everything that we do here on WLRN with help from folks like you, Diana, and others. Thanks so much. Great to have you along during this special pledge edition of the South Florida Roundup. And don't forget to continue making your donations during our program. Elections officials in Florida are bracing for an enormous jump of vote-by-mail ballots that's likely to come this year as the coronavirus pandemic continues. Millions of Floridians have requested VBM ballots, vote-by-mail. Hundreds of thousands already have been returned statewide. Counting all those votes can start before election night. What will that mean? Florida's voting results, will they be clear on the evening of November 3rd? Or could it take longer like it did 2 years ago with some races? WLRN's Danny Rivero and Katie Swatowski looked back at the 2018 recount in Broward County and how that could be a warning for this November for an upcoming episode of the program Reveal, which you will be able to hear right here on WLRN. Danny joins me now via Skype. Danny, welcome back to the South Florida Roundup. As you looked at that 2018 recount, what were some of the problems that stood out specifically in Broward County?
Right. So thanks for having me. The main problem in Broward County was that the Broward County Supervisor of Elections Office received tens of thousands of vote-by-mail ballots in the lead up to the election day, and it did not start counting them. Those tens of thousands, it was about 60,000 ballots until election day. So what it meant in the moment was that the vote results for the rest of the state had come in Broward County. We all watch that ticker on TV or wherever you're watching it that says the percentage of precincts reported. So Broward County reached this point where 100% of the precincts were in, and the vote tallies just kept going up. And it kept going up for several days after the election, which it caused panic in a lot of circles.
Yeah, panic and confusion and consternation, to put it diplomatically. But Florida counties can begin counting those vote-by-mail ballots before election night, though, can't they?
Yes, they can. And even 2 years ago, the counties could have started counting as early as 15 days before an election. Now, after the nightmare of 2018, the state actually went back in an omnibus elections bill, and they actually extended it to 22 days before an election. So you're talking in just like about a week and a half or so from where we are right now, they can actually start counting ballots. Now, the ability to count it and actually doing the counting are two different things, but the state is really urging election supervisors to start counting early so we don't end up where we were 2 years ago.
Have we had any confirmation, any clarity on whether or not the counties will take advantage of the earlier than ever ability to count the vote by mail ballots they receive back?
Yes. I mean, there is every indication that the vast majority, I can't say I've spoken to people in all 67 counties, but we should be expecting a lot of that counting to happen beforehand. But it does leave it's something that can't quite be avoided, because it comes down to the individual behavior of thousands of Floridians. Right. If people wait until the last possible moment to send in their mail-in ballots, those offices are still getting, and they're still expecting to get, huge amounts of vote-by-mail ballots dropped off on the last day. And even that itself, if they do early counting, can delay the vote count, just because it takes a lot longer to process and count the mail-in ballots as opposed to early voting or in person.
Remind us what the procedure is for folks who will vote by mail, but perhaps won't get around to turning that ballot in until election day. What do they need to do in order to get that ballot counted?
Right. Good question. So because it's by mail, they need to, in Florida, you have to sign the envelope on the outside. So they take basically photos of all the signatures to verify that it's the same person that signed it as the signature they have on file. So that's one step. They have to open the envelopes. They have there's like a mechanical process that is just not, it's not how it is with in-person voting. Right. There's several extra steps attached to it, and that just makes it a much lengthier time-wise to count those ballots.
More labor intensive, right? I mean, the early voting and voting in your polling precinct on election day has that optical scan ballot that gets scanned in, and then those precinct voting results get securely saved and then reported back to the Board of Elections on election night, right, Danny?
That's exactly right. And one thing that we should all keep in mind, it's something that I saw, covering the mayoral primary race here in Miami-Dade County, is because of this expected, huge surge in voting by mail, the initial results that we see from any election are not necessarily going to be reflective of the final results. So we had a mayoral race here in Miami-Dade County. You had a conservative candidate and a more progressive candidate. The early results showed the progressive candidate, Daniela Levine Cava, way ahead, and that was likely because people who are tend to vote Democrat and would more likely support a progressive candidate voted disproportionately by mail. So a lot of those votes were counted, and the votes that were coming in on election day tended to be more conservative. So by the end of the night, when the in-person votes were all tallied up, that actually switched, and the conservative Steve Bobo actually ended up on top of that race.
Yeah, that's WLRN's Daniel Rivero. He and WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swatowski have been reporting on the 2018 midterm elections for an upcoming episode of the program Reveal. You can listen to the reporting on WLRN Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. If you miss it, you can also find it wherever you get your podcasts. Just look for the program Reveal on that podcast app. Lots of questions around vote by mail, certainly in Florida, and the demand has just been through the roof, an exponential increase in vote by mail balloting. And as we mentioned at the top of this segment, some of those votes have already been returned. Dade County vote by mail ballots, I believe, Danny, went out this week. Broward County ballots went out last week. If they sit and gather dust and election day comes around for those folks, what's the process for somebody with a vote-by-mail ballot to still use that VBM ballot, but maybe they haven't used it until election day? What do they need to do?
Right. So there's two options in that case. If you still have your vote-by-mail ballot in your hand and it's election day, don't mail it out. It's not going to get there. So every county has drop-off boxes, and if it's on election day itself, it would have to be at a super of Supervisor of Elections office. You'd have to go to one of those offices and utilize one of the drop boxes. Or if you'd like to vote in person, you can take your vote by mail ballot to your designated precinct, and you would have to have the officials there basically cancel your vote by mail ballot. They will invalidate it, and then at that point you'll be able to cast a ballot in person.
What are county election supervisors telling you, Danny, about expectations of how fast the results will be reported on election night in Florida?
Well, we've been told there's every hope that all the results will get in on election night, or that as many as possible will get in. It is a goal to have all the counting done, or the vast majority of it done on election night. Realistically, we are also being told, and I think it's just in terms of what the public should expect, this could be drawn out for a couple days, and that will not be any reason to panic. That doesn't mean that anything is shady is going on behind the scenes. The deadlines for the initial counts to get returned are the Saturday after the election. So there is a built-in kind of window for the counting to be completed by design. So if it takes 1 day, 2 days, even 3 days, that's normal. That's within the realm of what should be expected, especially for an
maybe in the realm on paper, but it is not. It's few people's experiences to be patient beyond that first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, right? So walk us through that timeline again, Danny. We have been so conditioned, the year 2000 notwithstanding, to kind of have results, you know, before you go to bed on election night.
Right. That's exactly right. And I think there's a, you know, it's the modern experience that this is our expectation of it. Yeah. Historically, you know, in early American democracy, sometimes we didn't have presidential elections resolved until weeks later.
Before the telegram, you know, you had to, right. You know, go, the Pony Express was in operation, so to speak.
Right. I will add, if I can make an informed opinion, I think Florida's in a pretty good place with this. We have a lot of practice with it. We know what we're doing. What tends to bite us in the butt is just how close the races are here. Yeah. But we are pretty darn good at getting the votes counted in general. On election night, something just our listeners should be aware of is in Florida, we can start counting votes by mail 22 days out. But in a lot of states like Alabama, Michigan, Pennsylvania, they can't start opening any of those ballots until election day. So we're going to be, even if we're cleared out here, we're going to be nationally waiting several days to get the election. I don't see any way around.
Danny Rivero reporting on elections and a lot of other issues here at WLRN. You can find all of his coverage at WLRN.org. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks, Tom.
He and WLRN's Broward County reporter Katie Swatowski co-reported a look back, an investigative piece for the program Reveal. That episode airs here on WLRN Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. You can find that episode wherever you happen to get your podcasts. You can listen to it live Saturday afternoon at 3 here on WLRN. But again, you can find a podcast of that and look back to the 2018 Broward election. Just look for the program Reveal. Finally, on the roundup, each week we're going to be hearing stories from first-time voters in South Florida as Election Day approaches. Stephanie Sepulveda from Miami shared her story.
I grew up back and forth between Miami and Venezuela. I moved permanently to Miami when I was 16 years old, when the situation in Venezuela kind of escalated. I haven't voted in a presidential election in the past because I wasn't able to. I became a U.S. citizen recently, and now I'm finally able to participate in elections and vote and give back in a way to the country that has given me so much. There are so many issues at stake in this election that get me excited to vote and motivate me to vote. Off the top of my head, I think the first one, considering the political climate right now, are issues of like social justice and race relations. As a Latino woman and a woman of color, I think these are essential to the functioning of our country and to saving our democracy. Also, the courts are super important because they determine the future of our country for generations. And just in general, you know, I don't like extremism. I come from a country where extremism ruined our democracy, our democratic institutions, and I'm terrified that the country's going in the wrong direction. I am voting to preserve that right to vote and to kind of hopefully ensure that we don't go down this authoritarian or populist or corrupt path that my country of origin went down. It's very dangerous, and you know, populism or a cult of personality, whether it be from the right or it be from the left, is very dangerous, and I'm very aware of it because I've lived it.
That's Stephanie Sepulveda, first-time voter in Miami. Are you voting for the first time this year? Have you always been registered but never cast a ballot in a presidential election? Have you just submitted an application to register? The deadline is Monday. We want to hear from you. Send us a text to share your voting story. The text number is 786-677-0767. Again, the text number, 786-677-0767. Again, the deadline to register to vote in Florida is October 5th, Monday. You can register online at registertovoteflorida.gov. You can also submit a paper application by mail or in person to any supervisor of elections office. If you're choosing mail, it has to be postmarked by October 5th. The application can be found at the Florida Division of Elections website. Early voting across South Florida begins October 19th. That'll do it for the South Florida Roundup this week. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement editor is Katie Leprey. Lance Dixon is our digital editor. News director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. The director of radio programming at WLRN is Jason Zabka. The director of radio operations and the program's technical supervisor is Peter J. Mertz. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting WLRN. This program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.